The Athletic.
Football League Show. A momentous midweek at both ends of the Championship with Luton, Millwall and Forest amongst the winners. Reading gave their survival hopes a shot in the arm, but tis time up for Tisdale at Stevenage. We'll preview the weekend's key clashes with crunch games at the top of the Championship and the bottom of League One. All that and more to come on this Totally Football League Show in association with Paddy Power. It's Thursday, you know what that means. Time for us to gather and pour over the big news and notes from the EFL. I'm Matt Davis-Adams, joined today by just Sam Parkin. Sam, the technical gremlins means that it's just me and you today, but we'll be all right, won't we?
We'll soldier on, won't it? It's like lockdown again, isn't it? We should have a couple of drinks and maybe have a quiz.
You already had a quiz from me today, you're not getting any more.
Yeah, I have.
We're going to get straight into the midweek Championship games and we'll start at Kenilworth Road. Luton beating Preston by 4-0, up to fifth as a result of this. 7 wins in 10 and an impressive response to what happened against QPR at the weekend. Clearly, Nathan Jones' tears and heartbreak had an effect on his players.
It really was, because it feels like there's little margin for error now, considering the form of the teams just outside the playoffs and some of the sizes of the squad, the quality of, you know, Middlesbrough, Sheffield United, Forest and the like. So almost had to win this game, I think, in response after the disappointment of QPR, and did so resoundingly well. Adebayo, Cornick reunited in attack, Berry getting a couple of important goals. Go back to November for the last back-to-back defeat. So I think that, you know, underlines again just what a good spirit they've got at Luton. And obviously Nathan Jones is paramount in that.
And they'll need that spirit, won't they? Because although, as you said on the television last night, this was a nice fixture for them, given that Preston haven't got much to play for. Luton's still got to play Millwall, Blackpool, Fulham, Forest and Huddersfield. So on the one hand, you'd say that's a tough run in. On the other hand, you'd say, well, that's an opportunity for us to take points off those teams and stop them making or increasing the ground they have on us.
Yeah, I think Coventry have just had a real tough run against teams in a similar predicament to them. I don't know, with Luton, you'd almost, a bit of a cliche, but, you know, they seem to turn up in the big games. You know, I think of the way they played against Fulham and Bournemouth, to name just two at home. Obviously, QPR challenging recently. They put on a decent display. I don't think that they're overawed by anyone, to be honest. It's probably just injuries that's going to hold them back. And they ended without any of the back three that started the QPR game. So that's a big issue, because I think that's where they've been particularly strong. I've loved Naismith this season. I think he's a terrific ball playing centre half. Burke's excellent as well on the right hand side, and Lockyer has been pretty good since he's been at the club as well. So that's going to take some getting over, and that's not to mention the goalkeeping issues they've had throughout the campaign. So that's the only thing really I see stopping Luton. You know, I think they're still a very good shout to creep in there. There's going to be one surprise, whether it's them or Millwall or maybe someone else coming from deep. But, you know, it was a great win last night to respond.
Well, you mentioned Millwall. They ended Huddersfield's 17-game unbeaten league run, a 2-0 win at the Den. Benikofobe got both of them. Where's this crept up from, Sam? I mean, it's an 8-game unbeaten run, so it's not like, you know, they've only just won their last couple of games or whatever, but I'm sure we were saying that they were one of the few teams without much to play for the rest of the season a couple of weeks ago.
I think it's, again, that underdog spirit. Gary Rowett spoke about it last night, just taking, you know, each game in isolation, not probably worrying about the bigger picture, because there's not that huge external pressure from the supporters. I think, you know, everything I've read recently, that there's an understanding of the restrictions on Gary Rowett, maybe at the club, in terms of, you know, the amount of quality he's got, the amount of players he's got. And there's a realisation that he's doing a pretty damn good job. This recent run, of course, is about the defensive setup, the clean sheets that they're churning out, and against good opposition as well. You know, Middlesbrough, Blackburn, Huddersfield in recent weeks. These are, you know, top Championship sides that they're keeping out. But, you know, I think I spoke about it with Clarkey on a recent podcast. You know, that front line, when it fires, is very, very good. And last night, you know, they all came to the party, Bennett, Wallace, and obviously Afobe, and they got Bury, the young lad in reserve right now. So that's four excellent attacking options that they've got, which they can rely on, you know, having that defensive shape, let those three or four go and produce the goods. And last night, Afobe was the man, as so often happens against one of his former clubs. I think they had three former Huddersfield players in their ranks. And that was as one-sided as the Luton victory. I mean, that should have been 3-4-0, no problem at all to Millwall.
We'll talk more about Huddersfield later in our preview section, but let's move on to Forest against QPR. Davis Adams versus Parkin and Lloyd Hughes. Forest coming from behind to beat Rangers after a scintillating second half performance. I was there at the City Ground for this one. Andre Gray had put Rangers ahead. But what about that Jed Spence strike? It was just, I mean, larruped would be the word that I would use.
Jed Spence. Oh! Just marvel at that! What an absolutely stunning goal from Jed Spence.
Yeah, almost like a dead ball, wasn't it? Like a free kick, the kind of wobble technique. It was a bit peculiar, but very much a modern day long range goal. You didn't see them too often on the mud patches of the 70s and 80s. It was an incredible goal. And it turned the game on its head, really, from that moment. You know, Forest were the only side in it. QPR, it felt to me, ran out of a bit of steam. The Chris Willock injury would have deflated them, even though Ilias Chair is a great deputy last night. But I think just after that emotive victory at Luton, a bit too much going to Forest in the following game, when you're not playing well as well, Matt. They're not playing well. You know, I tried to articulate it on the TV the other day. 3 or 4 games to go, doesn't matter how you get the points, just get yourselves in the playoffs and potentially get yourselves in the Premier League. I'm talking about maybe a third of the season that Rangers haven't been playing free-flowing stuff like they were in the early weeks. I can think of so many recent victories post-Christmas where they haven't really deserved the 3 points. It's an issue, and you feel in the back of your mind you might get that momentum from the Luton game, but I think the issues with some injuries to key players at the moment, Dykes, Willock, now horrendous goalkeeping issues. It's going to be a real fight to get into those playoffs. But yeah, no qualms last night. You deserved your night. Like you so often get against QPR, Matt. I think I've only had one victory at the City Ground in my long suffering years.
Yeah, it's about 30 odd years or so. So David Marshall goes off injured. Senny Dieng was unavailable. Defender Lee Wallace finished in goal. And as is always the case in this situation, he didn't have a single save to make. There were only a couple of minutes to go at that point. I'm still surprised that Forest aren't in the playoffs, Sam. Do you think that they are bound for them now, given the form? And if not, will it be because they're going to be without the likes of Steve Cook and Max Lowe for the next 6 weeks?
Oh, I don't know. I think I'm with you, really. I think it's been such a incredible period under Steve Cooper. The second best, isn't it, since in terms of points since Chris Hughton was replaced. So he's done a miraculous job turning around the club that was, I don't know, just in the midst of such a lull. It was really tough watching Forest, I think, the last couple of years. So now these two most recent results have got to be backed up now, you know, in some tricky games around the corner. I say tricky games: Blackpool, Coventry, Birmingham. You could argue there's three teams who have got very little to play for. I think, you know, Coventry need to probably take maximum points the next couple of fixtures to stay in with a shout. I could see their opportunity to get in the playoffs petering out. So these next three games, massive to creep themselves into the playoffs.
And the small matter of an FA Cup quarter-final against one of the best teams in Europe to come on Sunday too. Well, you mentioned Coventry there, Sam, beaten 2-0 at home by Hull. I mean, this only days after that impressive come-from-behind win against Sheffield United. They didn't have Mark Robbins and AD Vivash for that one, and they didn't even have Dennis Lawrence, who took the team on Saturday, for this one. So it was Luke Tisdale, the under-23s coach, who took charge. It's funny, isn't it? Because you say on Saturday, it obviously didn't have that much of an effect, but it's got to have an effect, hasn't it? Not having your three main first team coaches on the touchline. It just can't be that same continuity, or, you know, whether it's the players not understanding what the new guy wants, or just that feeling of discomfort that the usual people aren't there.
Yeah, and probably, I think in the days preceding, or maybe it was just a day, on the training ground, yeah, that's a bit of an issue, I would say. It maybe takes care of itself when you get round to match day. I don't know how much of a bearing, for example, Ady Vivash, Dennis Lawrence has on a match day. They'll have their duties, whether it's set pieces, you know, whether it's taking the warm-up and such like. So it could have been a bit of a disabling factor, but I wouldn't put it hugely down to that last night. I just think it's a bit of a roller coaster supporting Coventry at the moment, from the highs of beating Sheffield United to that last night in the first half, defensively woeful, you know, I thought. And it's uncharacteristic maybe for them. You know, I've liked their back three for a number of years. They're a bit patched up there with Ben Sheaf, a midfield player, playing in the middle. So I think that's partly why it went wrong last night. That said, there was three or four contentious decisions that went for Hull City last night. I thought there was probably a penalty for a tackle on Tavares at 2-0, which would have given them a bit of a lifeline. But yeah, I mean, if I was unsure about Blackburn being proper automatic promoted contenders, it's probably the same for Coventry in terms of their race for the playoffs.
Cheltenham 2022 is underway, and we've already seen some cracking contests in the Cotswolds. Not to mention the biggest influx of Irish since London in the 1980s. They're here, and they're making a big deal about the greatest rivalry Britain's never heard of. So, as the British trainers aim to put the Irish trainers back in their little green horse boxes, here at Paddy Power, we're turning up the generosity every day at Cheltenham. Like a completely free £5 bet on any race on day three of the festival. Paddy Power.
Max free bet £5 per customer. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Let's go back to Tuesday. Big game at the bottom of the table. Barnsley's recent revival continuing. They beat beleaguered Bristol City by 2-0 at Oakwell, scoring twice in the first half of the first half. Great for Barnsley. We talked a lot about them lately, Sam. They got Carlton Morris scoring in successive games for the first time in more than a year, only 2 points behind Reading now. But from a Bristol City perspective, your manager used to be a centre-half. How do you not mark at corners? It was absolutely atrocious defending for these two goals.
Yeah, the first one was kind of allowed to drop in the six-yard box, wasn't it? I think it was the young Bristol City centre-half who missed the flight of it. And then Barnsley get a bit of good fortune with the ricochet. But the second one, again, the Bristol City players seem to be remonstrating maybe with the referee about a potential block, but it was weak defending. They've been atrocious in that department throughout the season, just Reading that have conceded more from set pieces. And I think it's just a case of Bristol City being worked out last night. Barnsley doing their work on the training ground, probably recognising that there was a weakness at the near post, and taking full advantage. And it's somewhere that Barnsley was incredibly strong last year and have gone away from it this year. And I think that they had 11 more set-piece goals in the previous campaign, which would have amounted to a considerably better points tally over the course of the season. So if they can add that to their armoury, then, you know, they're a problem for Reading right now, because they've got, seem to have a feel-good factor about the place. And, you know, you go on the message boards and such like a while ago, he was getting absolute pelters, the manager. So the turnaround has been, yeah, a lot down to him, but a lot down to players coming back into form like Carlton Morris, and also the new arrivals in January being banging form. Keener and Bassey, I don't think, have put a foot wrong really since they've come into the side. So if Reading are showing, I suppose, a glimmer of life, yeah, Barnsley are putting on a hell of a challenge. It's going to be a great battle between those two.
So we're ruling Derby out now then. 5-6 for them. They lost 3-1 at Blackburn, having been in front. Big win for Blackburn. First time they'd scored more than once in a league game this year. But they had momentum, Derby, but it seems to have very much stopped now.
Yeah, you want to see some kind of glimmer away from home that they're going to start garnering points, but 7 straight defeats on the road. You know, a bit of a lack of a goal threat. I think Plange, since he's had his move and the loan back, he's not hit the heights. Kazim Richards has not been, I don't think, available for many games, or he's not played as a nine. So he's trying different permutations at the top of the pitch. Well, not the first time we've seen Morrison play as a false nine and obviously got himself a goal. But no, I don't think it's sustainable if you can't arrest this horrendous recent away record. So yeah, worrying as well, the way they capitulated against the side that have had such problems themselves in front of goal. You know, Blackburn looked completely revitalised in the second half once Tony Mowbray had 15 minutes to get into them. So I'm sure that was not for the faint-hearted, that half-time, because two changes, complete change in the setup, says to me that he was very displeased with the first period. And Blackburn, you know, deservedly got the points. But yeah, I think it's looking difficult for Derby unless they can start picking things up on the road.
So difficult for Derby, Barnsley on the way back, and Reading picked up an excellent point away at Bournemouth. Scott Parker watching from the stands for this one, a one match ban for him after he was sent off at Preston earlier this month. Do we owe the Ince family an apology?
For the goal, one of the best strikes I've seen in the last few weeks. Yeah, probably.
It is exactly what football's about. You know, the celebrations with the fans, the ones who've travelled, you know, on Tuesday night all the way down here. To give him that is great.
It looked like he was on his way, maybe, didn't he, Tom Ince? He was being restrained by a few of the players, maybe on his way to have a few choice words with someone. For someone who just scored such a brilliant goal, he looked a little bit displeased. But yeah, no, that's a great point for him. Second half, by all accounts, they controlled the ball. As much to do with Bournemouth's inability to put games to bed, inability to play attacking football over the course of two halves. And it's the same criticism that comes time and time again for Scott Parker. You know, little subtle changes in the formation at half time, took Cantwell off and he brought Lowe on, but he changed the configuration of the side and made them a little bit more defensive, and then also brought Pearson on quite early. So he just tries to see out games, Scott Parker. And he's good at doing so at times, but it's got the potential to go wrong. And Reading dominated in the second half. And I wouldn't say so much that he's under pressure from the hierarchy at the club, because it doesn't feel like that. And when you consider the position they're in, but I think from the supporters' side, I think there'd be a pretty large percentage right now who wouldn't mind someone else coming in, which sounds incredible, but that seems to be the flack that he's getting is amounting to that type of thing.
Yeah, last three games been at home to Peterborough, Derby and Reading, and they've won one of them. They are 3 points clear of third place Huddersfield, and they've got three games in hand on them. But as everybody's saying at the moment, you'd rather have the points on the board than the games in hand. West Brom beat Fulham by a goal to nil. Good win for Steve Bruce and West Brom and all that. But let's be honest, this is probably not going to affect what happens to either of those two this season. West Brom, a little bit short for the playoffs, and Fulham, well, they're going up, aren't they? Our friend Adrian Clark was at St Andrews on Tuesday night to see Middlesbrough win an away league game for the first time this year. He sent us this report.
Yeah, Birmingham City looked a really bad side in this contest. They started out okay in a 3-5-2, but that changed to a 4-4-2 diamond during the first half when Mengi went off injured. But in both setups, there was no discernible pattern of play. And the longer the match went on, the more disjointed their performance became. The players had no fire at all in their bellies. The atmosphere was pretty non-existent, I've got to say. And worryingly, it just feels like the Blues fans are now so disenchanted that the apathy has set in. Borough were solid. The back three were excellent. Dyke, Steele, McNair lived up to the hype with their trademark marauding runs, although McNair's penalty miss was pretty feeble. Tavernier was bright in midfield. But up top, I think the star man was Flo Balogun. Had perhaps his best display in a Borough shirt. He linked play brilliantly for the opening goal with a back heel. His goal was a sumptuous curler, and he also had a 1v1 finish that was disallowed. He was excellent. Hopefully he can build his confidence from here. Borough won this 2-0 in third gear, I'd say. And in a nutshell, they looked a well-oiled, cohesive team. Birmingham were the opposite.
Always good to hear from Adrian Clark. Right, we'll have a look at what happened in Leagues 1 and 2 next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. If you want to read more Football League content from the likes of Nancy Frostick, Paul Taylor, Phil Buckingham, Peter Rutzler, and more of The Athletic's best writers, you can do so by heading to theathletic.com/league show and get yourself a subscription of just £1 a month for the next 6 months. That's theathletic.com/league show.
Amongst the standout results in League One on Tuesday, Rotherham made hard to work for 3 points against Lincoln. They were 2-0 up after 13 minutes, but had to survive a late scare to preserve their victory. Friend of the show, Chidozie Ogbene, with what proved to be the decisive goal. This feels like a big win, actually, Sam, for Rotherham, because it was their first in four. It means they're 7 points above MK. They were on their worst run of the season, if you can say such a thing, for the season that they've had. But important to get the victory here.
It was, yeah, and especially, you know, after the last week, which has been quite testing, I think, physically for Rotherham. I mean, Paul Warne was in brilliant form after the Papa John's victory over Hartlepool, but he was literally down to his bare bones in terms of his attacking talent. So much so, I think he put out a rallying call the day before the game as to who wanted to play number 10 and said he saw about 10 arms shoot up into the air. Only for Ben Wiles' night to be cut short because of an injury to someone else playing in that role. So, yeah, good to see for them having Coyote up there with Smith for this game and Ogbeni back in and Wiles getting a goal. And, yeah, it shouldn't have been as close as it was. You know, you talk about Scott Parker making defensive changes. Paul Warne did that himself last night. Harding and McDonald on for Ogbeni and Barlasser. You know, two very defensive subs to shore up an advantage. And Lincoln very nearly came back in, but it's what Rotherham have done all season. Just, you know, trailed once at half-time throughout this whole campaign. So they're brilliant fast starters. They know how to manage games and they'll do it again, you know, as the season continues. So, yeah, big win against a side who are very capable, but have been so inconsistent this year. It must be such a frustration for Michael Appleton and the Lincoln support because they've got some talented boys.
Well, Wigan kept up the pressure on Rotherham with a 2-0 win and a Crewe side who are starting to look doomed to League Two. What's it like, Sam, when you can see just before and just after half-time like Crewe do here? In my head, that's about as demoralising as it gets for players because you want to get to half-time, you know, having kept your sheet clean, and then you concede and the manager says, right, do this, that and the other, and then you won't concede again, and then it happens straight away.
I think last night, given the circumstances that Crewe find themselves in, the second one would have been the big blow. I think you're playing against a very talented side, albeit at home, 1-0 behind at halftime, you're still thinking you stay in the game to the latter stages and you might be able to salvage something. I think the second one makes it a bit of a foregone conclusion, the way that Wigan can defend the quality of their players and the lack of Crewe goals. I think they've only scored two once in the last 12 games or something, which it's not something the players will go into the game necessarily thinking about, but it's fact. They're not full of goals right now and they're invariably not going to score two against one of the top sides. So probably was a difficult 40 minutes or so for them. And the season, yeah, looks to be petering out. There's the sides down there. Well, probably Gillingham that have shown a little bit more fight in the last few weeks. There seems to be a certain sense of inevitability about, and Crewe are certainly top of that list.
Yeah, 8 points from safety now. Fleetwood in trouble too after they lost at Adams Park. Wickham snatching a late victory thanks to the scruffiest goal of the week. James McCarthy got it on 90+4. We'll talk more about Fleetwood later, but this significant for Wickham, Sam, because of the nature of the victory, but also because it leaves them only a point outside the playoffs.
I'd probably say that was a must win for Wickham. So definitely a more significant victory for them when Fleetwood's fate is not going to be decided by that type of fixture. They need to beat the teams around them. That's clear as day. But for Wickham, absolutely vital that they got the win. And I think, you know, credit to Gareth Ainsworth, because I think he spoke around the Rotherham game about even at this stage of the season, playing a bit differently, a bit more control in possession and a change in formation. You know, they were playing that back three and they had Jacobson for one, I think McCarthy at times, a beater as well, not recognisable central defenders playing different role for the manager in this system. So to change to a back four, 4-2-3-1, I think he's gone to, and it's three clean sheets in four, three victories. So yeah, I think four victories actually. I mean, you know, enormous credit for making that change at this stage of the season and getting a result so quickly. But yeah, I mean, we speak about it so often, a late goal. You know, they'd probably, if I was still playing, it's the last place you'd want to be in the last 5-10 minutes trying to hold on to something, honestly, because we know the physicality of them. We know the delivery that our mate Joe puts in. And, you know, set pieces, direct balls, they put you under enormous amount of pressure. So those 12 points that they've won in added on time is probably going to be the reason why they go close this year again.
Shout outs too to Shrewsbury for thumping Morecambe 5-0 and Accrington for bringing a point back from Hillsborough. They drew 1-1 with Sheffield Wednesday. In League Two, there was a second successive 2-0 win for Bradford. Port Vale moved above Mansfield after beating them 3-1, and Bristol Rovers are into the playoffs after a narrow win against Colchester. Meanwhile, a 2-1 home defeat to Northampton, the final straw for Stevenage, who sacked Paul Tisdale on Wednesday, replacing him with Steve Evans. It's been a while since Graham Westley was in charge, Sam. Did they decide they just needed another Aggie manager to get them away from the bottom of League Two?
Seems to be the way there, doesn't it? Shame for Tisdale. You know, I thought when he initially went in, I think we said on the podcast, you know, they're no longer relegation candidates, maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, because the turnaround after a few games was evident for everyone to see. A lot of experienced signings. He's got the know-how of getting out of trouble in League Two. Yeah, he's a very different type of manager to Steve Evans, I would suggest. So it's going to be a bit of a shock for the players who would have been, yeah, under pressure. But in my experience, it's quite a nice environment that Paul Tisdale puts on for the players. You know, it's not kind of running them, or you know, any old school methods or going over the top in terms of lambasting them. You know, it's all quite measured in terms of trying to make game plans to pick up points. So yeah, it's going to be a different tact, I'm sure, from Steve Evans, but they are sleepwalking themselves into big trouble. So something probably needed to be done considering the 8-game winless run.
Steve Evans, who left Mansfield to take a League One job at Gillingham, might find himself in the National League next season. Who's his first game as Stevenage manager against? Of course, it's at Mansfield this weekend. It's now 7 games without a win for Forest Green Rovers, held at home by a Leighton Orient side. It's still looking for their first win of 2022. Sam, you and Adrian have been so dismissive of me over the last few weeks. Is it happening? Is there a chance it's happening? Is the gap still big enough? I mean, It's more than a wobble, this, isn't it? 7 games. There is seriously something up there.
Yeah, it's definitely a wobble. I think it's Colchester up next for them. So if we can speak after that, I'll give you a more definitive answer. Because if they lose that one, then they are in trouble. I think there's a lack of confidence there. I think tiredness is an issue. And I say that, and I don't say that lightly, because I think it's a bit of a cop-out sometimes, but I think it's a pretty small squad. Essentially, it's the squad that Mark Cooper had, and they weren't able to get out of the division. So Rob Edwards has done a brilliant job. I just think if he could have had maybe a couple of new signings in January, for example, even a slightly deeper squad start of the season, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation right now. I look at the bench, I look at the game changes that are available to them. There isn't really any. Jake Young, quite an exciting front player, is one who could come in. But do you want to break up that partnership of Stevens and Matt that have got them such success? Teams seem to be doing a good job on those two and on the wide boys right now, Cadden and Wilson, who had exceptional first halves of the season. So it is a big worry. I still think they'll make it. And the reason I think they'll make it is because I don't see a team beneath them with the quality to go consistently till the end of the season and close that gap. They've still got a nice cushion, and I think Forest Green will garner enough points somehow.
All right, so that was the midweek action. We'll preview some of the weekend's standout fixtures next.
This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis-Adams.
The game at the top of the Championship goes down in Yorkshire, where Huddersfield Town welcome Bournemouth to the John Smith Stadium. We were talking about Forest Green before the break, Sam, and what constitutes a wobble. Huddersfield have been amazing this season. I'm not saying they're in wobble territory yet, but lost at Forest in the Cup, threw away that two-goal lead at West Brom last week, and then beaten at Millwall. This is a testing period for them, therefore, but actually, they might like the fact that they're playing a team who they are essentially competing for second place with. That kind of changes the stakes of this game a little bit, doesn't it? It becomes less about Huddersfield's form and more about the importance of this individual fixture.
Yeah, if they can put their own woes aside and focus on what will probably be quite a nervy Bournemouth squad, then absolutely I don't see any doubt to rule them out from winning this game. Huddersfield, I think, impress me every time I see them in terms of their tactical flexibility. I think the manager, the way he coaches the players is excellent. You never know what shape they're going to play. I think it was back to three at the back for the trip to Millwall. It didn't necessarily work, but for 20 minutes, 15 minutes at the start, they got some joy, got some shots off. Bielkowski was called into action. They got three really good centre-halves. I mean, me and Levi Colwill, Matt, Tom Lees and Matty Pearson. And I think you consider the season that they've all had, the form they've had, I think sometimes that makes it very difficult for the manager to leave one of them out. So it gives them great flexibility to play with a three or to play with a four. So it'd be fascinating to see what he does tactically for this game. But it's probably going to be whether Scott Parker can get in front and stay in front. You know, can he put a side out there who's going to be a bit more free-flowing, a bit more attack-minded? Because not that he's going to appease everyone, but I think a performance is required for Bournemouth right now. I don't think getting points, getting over the line in matches is going to satisfy everyone that follows the club.
Well, this is a fixture that they've had a lot of success in recent years. They've won the last five meetings between the sides, some pretty big scores too. 14-2 is the aggregate over those five matches. If you like your League One action low on quality but sky high on tension, then Fleetwood Town v Doncaster Rovers, just the game for you. We mentioned Fleetwood's defeat at Wickham. In their last three matches, they've let a goal in after the 90th minute, two of which were winners. Bottom of the form table, not won since that weird victory against Rotherham of all teams in January. At the moment, as it stands, are they one of your teams to go down?
Oh, I think they have to be. Yeah, I mean, I looked at the goal scorers this morning. Gerald Garner's been back for, I think, two starts after having an absence for injury. He's got seven. And then the next top goal scorer is Danny Andrew, fullback, with six goals. He's got six assists as well. So he contributed loads early part of the season. But for a team that we were quite complimentary about in an attacking sense, I think there's some serious pressure on Garner to get back in the side and get the goals. They played Danny Butterworth on loan from Blackburn at Wickham in the week, and by all accounts, he was very good, but hasn't scored yet on loan for the club. So that's going to be very interesting to see who can come up with the goods in an attacking sense. Average age of the side at Wickham, under 21. Five starters, 21 and under, which, yeah, this is a manager who has coached the young lads at Fleetwood. And he knows them and he trusts them. Do they have enough experience for the predicament that they're in right now? I would say no. You know, and they're in exactly the same type of situation as Wimbledon. They can't get points. They can't see out advantages. That's 13 they've conceded in the last 10 minutes. Only Gillingham with a worse record. So there's a fragility about this Fleetwood side. And I always say it, five straight defeats at the moment, six, seven. That's normally when chairman decide it's time to make a change. So you wouldn't be surprised if someone came in maybe to help Stephen Craney in the time that remains.
And for Doncaster, it's must win, isn't it? 4 points behind Fleetwood and Wimbledon as it stands. The worst goal difference in the division. And what? We've only got eight games left to go. So even a draw is not much use to them here.
No, but you know what I'd say about Doncaster is they've pulled out a few results when you thought they were dead and buried. They beat MK Dons, I seem to recall, relatively recently. Went to Sunderland and won. So there's something there. They got a little bit of impetus from the January signings. Whether it's going to be enough to stay in the division, I doubt. But similarly to last week's game against Gillingham, this is enormous. I think for morale more than anything, you know, to play against a relegation rival who are in dire straits and not pick up anything, I think that could probably be the end of Doncaster.
In League Two, meanwhile, we're taking a look at Sutton United versus Tranmere Rovers at Gander Green Lane. Contrasting fortunes for the pair in midweek. Sutton lost at Swindon. Tranmere had a straightforward win against Harrogate. It means Sutton are a place and 3 points off the playoffs, whilst only goal difference keeps Tranmere out of the automatic promotion places. Sutton, outside the playoffs then, lost to Swindon in midweek. They've got Wembley on their mind potentially. Injury-ravaged squad, just 3 outfield players on the bench midweek for them. What's more important for them, this final in the EFL Trophy or getting a place in the playoffs?
I think playoffs, but it's marginal. It's marginal. I think for the supporters, I was at the Swindon game. For the people I spoke to around the club, they're kind of pinching themselves. You know, honestly, it's an amazing story. They're pretty well supported for a Tuesday night away from home. And I think the players, you know, that goes hand in hand. The potential for some of these lads that have played the majority of their career in the non-league or for some examples, their whole career, to be League One footballers and to be going to Sunderland and Ipswich and Portsmouth and stuff like that. You know, that beats a day out at Wembley, I'm afraid, because you may get there in another competition, the Vase, the trophy. I'm sure some of the lads have been there before. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a brilliant occasion to go to Wembley, but I just think what they're on the cusp of achieving, they need to just try and refocus, which is incredibly difficult because of the problems they've got right now. They had a centre-forward, Bougiel, in midfield. Lovett, his central midfield partner, I don't think had started a game in the league this season. A winger up front. 41-year-old, sorry if I'm doing him a disservice, substitute who doubles up as the fitness coach coming on for the last few minutes. It's not great right now because they've got big problems and big problems with some of their most senior players, the most reliable players, Eastman and Beautyman in midfield, not available. So this is another massive game. That if they respond here, then that'll give them probably incredible confidence to finish the job. But a defeat against a good Tranmere side. And I just sense with the way that Port Vale, Mansfield, Bristol Rovers are going, their challenge could peter out. But it would be no disgrace because it's been an incredible season for them. And, you know, I really enjoyed watching them again on Tuesday. The spirit is so evident. And yes, Swindon are going for promotion as well, going for automatic promotion. But the way that they were made to work for it was incredibly impressive considering their problems.
A Tranmere back to their best, do you think? Back-to-back wins against Mansfield and Harrogate after losing 4 of the previous 5?
I'm not sure. I thought the Mansfield game could have gone either way. I thought Tranmere were better for periods, but Mansfield had great spells as well. It was quite end-to-end. Elliot Nevitt obviously came to their rescue on that night and they got a helping hand from the officials, definitely. And in their last game against Harrogate, Luke Armstrong should never have seen red. That said, it's difficult to play against 10 men. Patience was the key. And they eventually broke them down. Lewis Warrington, by all accounts, on loan from Everton, was the star performer in this game. And they've got the best home record, the most wins, I think, in the whole of the EFL, which just shows you how formidable they are at home. So that's probably not what's going to arrest their kind of march towards the playoffs or automatic promotion. It's whether they can take points from these games like the weekend. So I don't think they're fully back in their stride, but they're so streetwise, so defensively sound. That looks like that's what's going to prosper in League Two this year. The likes of Tranmere, Northampton. It's kind of how are they, you know, remaining so competitive? How without, you know, goal scorers that are fully informed, that are scoring an abundance of goals. But it seems that this is the season for sides to be defensively resolute and achieve promotion a different way. That certainly looks to be on the cards.
Be a close one, I think, that one. Let's see what the odds are saying and bring in producer Abby, who's going to tell us about those games and who's expected to win them, courtesy of our friends at Paddy Power.
Thank you, Matt. Yes, we'll begin in the Championship, where that match for sort of second place takes place between Huddersfield and Bournemouth. And it is Bournemouth who are the heavy favourites here. They are 11-8 to beat Huddersfield. Huddersfield 2-1, and the draw is 11-5 in that game. If we move over to League One and head down to the bottom of the table, we'll see that Fleetwood are the odds-on favourites to beat Doncaster, which goes very much against the form books. So that is an interesting one. Could get some value from Doncaster, as Sam mentioned. They have pulled up a few results of late. They are 10-3 to beat Fleetwood. Fleetwood 3-4. The draw 13-5. So there's some potential value in that one if you fancy taking a slightly riskier bet in that direction. And finally, we head to League Two. Sutton hosting Tranmere, and Sutton the favourites in this one, actually. They are 7-5, Tranmere 2-1, and a draw 21-10. So I don't know about you, but hearing and seeing that Sutton have got a very depleted squad, I'm looking at Tranmere, I'm looking at that 2-1, and I'm thinking that that might be a good shout for some value as well.
Thanks, Abby. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. It's over 18s only. Prices are accurate at the time of recording and when the fun stops. Stop. All right, before we go, Sam, I'm sure you're aware this week marks the 20th anniversary of the infamous Battle of Bramall Lane, when the game between Sheffield United and West Brom had to be abandoned. The first and only time that's happened in English league football because of a lack of players. If you didn't know this, listener, this will shock you. Neil Warnock and Gary Megson were the respective managers. It leads me to ask, if it all kicked off in a game you were playing, in which current EFL player would you want on your side? Now, we know that fighting is not your particular skill or in your wheelhouse, Sam. So who are you hiding behind when it all kicks off?
Well, I thought about Harry McCurdy because I just thought you'd rather have him on your side and he'd probably have a catapult or something down his sock. But I think there's only one answer here. And it's funny because he does dive around a little bit at times, this guy, but it's all part of the package. It's Alexander Mitrovic I'm going with. Yeah, someone okay. Very much, you know, out of the same mould as myself, I would like to say, when I was playing. You know, aggressive centre forward. I think he'd scare people just purely the way he looks, to be honest. So definitely I'd be hiding behind big Alexander.
Yeah, he was on my list. I had Adebayo Akinfenwa as well, but is he too nice? Is it all just an act with him, do you think?
Yeah, you can't base your answer here on FIFA stats, Matt. I think you've right. fallen into that
trap, yeah.
Yeah.
Easy done. Troy Deeney, ex-teammate of yours?
Yeah, Troy, definitely.
All right. I'd maybe go Ryan Yates as well, just because I think that there's nothing that he can't do at the moment. And I'd like to just stand behind him, just to be that close to him. There's a really good big read up on The Athletic now, by the way, listener. Go to theathletic.com/leagueshow to sign up if you're not currently a subscriber. It's got all the quotes from everybody basically who was involved in the stuff that happened that game. It's fair to say that Neil Warnock and Gary Megson do not like each other very much, but it's good rubbernecking stuff, so go and have a read of that if you can. We will be back on Monday when we'll be reflecting on all the weekend's games. Until then, many thanks to Sam and Abby for joining me today, and for Adrian for posting his voice note. That was nice too. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and keep up to date with everything Totally by heading to @thetotallyshow on Twitter and on Insta. Find out the latest subscription offers by going to theathletic.com/leagueshow. The Totally Football League Show is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.